My guest tonight, Don Cusick, teaches music industry history at Belmont University in Nashville. He's written many books, including biographies of Roger Miller, Eddie Arnold, and Hank Williams. He's also a songwriter whose songs have been recorded by Bobby Bear, Peter Noon, Jim Ed Brown, and Ray Stevens, plus many others. He's also written a beautiful book entitled Nashville Sound, An Illustrated Timeline. Don, welcome to WVXU.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Your book, Nashville Sound, is a testament to the rainbow of music found in Music City, USA. Let's start with the 1800s music in Nashville, including the Fisk Jubilee Singers.
Yes. They really started all. We had fiddlers playing before then, and obviously music in town, but it was the Fisk Jubilee Singers that put Nashville on the map as a music city.
And I enjoyed your approach to Nashville's music history in the book by dividing chapters up with a timeline. But then that must have been hard work, deciding what to include in each section. What was your research like, and how long did it take you to put all this together in this beautiful volume?
Well, there's two answers to that question of how long it took. One answer is about a year, and the other answer is over 40 years. You know, I've written over 30 books, and I've done a lot of research through the years of, you know, in the history of music in Nashville. So it's really a culmination of all of those years squeezed into the 1 year of actually getting that stuff written.
Do you have file cabinets filled with various memorabilia?
Yes, I do. I've also got to say that my research assistant, Olivia Beaudry, really deserves a lot of credit because she found a lot of those pictures.
And they're beautiful photographs, too, both black and white and color.
Yeah, Reedy, the publisher, did a great job on the layout of that.
And WSM Radio and the Grand Ole Opry were central characters in Nashville's history, with musicians traveling long distance for a chance to be heard. What about musicians of other musical genres? What were their possibilities in Nashville back in the day?
Well, when you go back into the 40s and 50s, Nashville had a thriving R&B scene. And in fact, what people don't remember or realize is that WLAC was the number one R&B radio station in the nation at the end of the 40s and early 50s. It wasn't just country music, and there was a real core of musicians playing on Jefferson Street, which was, you know, at that time it was a segregated society. There was a black section of town, the white section of town, and Jefferson Street was where the African-American businesses were located.
You included actually a lot of the record companies in the book, like Decca, as well as the history of Music Row.
Yes, but you know, it really goes back to an independent label named Bullet. In 1945, the end of World War II, Nashville did not have a single recording studio or record company. And a guy named Jim Boulay started Bullet Records. He had the first million seller to come out of Nashville, a song called Near You by Francis Craig, and that really kicked it off.
And I was surprised to see the John Coltrane recorded at Republic Records.
I was surprised at that, too. I think what happened, he was in town in the clubs, the African-American clubs, had a lot of musicians coming through. You know, Ray Charles, Little Richard, all those guys played in Nashville. I think Coltrane, that's how he ended up on one of those sessions.
And since King Records was located here in Cincinnati, what was the relationship with Castle Studio in the early 50s and later Gusto Records with King?
Well, first of all, a lot of artists recorded, country artists recorded in Cincinnati at the Herzog Recording Studio. That was a major recording center for a number of years in Cincinnati before the Castle Recording Studio really got going, or in the early days of going. That was our first real studio here.
And when did Gusto Records start?
Oh, Gusto. That came along later. Wasn't that an offshoot of Starday with Don Pierce? And that was around 1950.
And when did they acquire King Records?
That came in the 1960s. Well, they acquired King, but they didn't acquire the James Brown catalog, which was Federal. That was all owned by Sid Nathan. And Nathan died around 66 or so. And then after that, the record label was sold. And it's owned by a guy named Mo Lytle, who ended up buying it but I don't know really when that took place. Maybe it was in the 70s. Seemed like in the early 70s I remember that happening.
And you mentioned also in the book that James Brown appeared at the Grand Ole Opry in 1979. That should have been real interesting.
Well, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is those early African-American R&B performers grew up listening to country music because it was on the radio. You know, blues wasn't on the radio. R&B wasn't on the radio until rock and roll hit, really, those early days. And so those early R&B performers loved country. Ray Charles loved, you know, he cut two albums. Porter Wagoner, he was a member of the Opry, knew about James Brown wanting to play the Opry, and so he arranged for Brown to play, and apparently it was quite an event.
And Elvis Presley only performed once at the Grand Ole Opry. What was his relationship to Nashville?
Elvis did a lot of recording in Nashville because he was signed as a country artist. You know, he was a white Southern boy, and his early stuff was on the country charts. And so when he signed with RCA, his very first recording session for that label was in Nashville. And then he came back regularly to record at RCA Studio B, known as Studio B now, for years. Got a lot of his singles and albums, not the movie stuff. The movie stuff was done in L.A., but cut a lot of those songs right here in Nashville.
And Nashville musicians, including Chet Atkins, Boots Randolph, and Floyd Kramer, were scheduled to perform at the Newport Jazz Festival in 1960. How'd that turn out?
Not too good. It became popular with college students, and some of them looked at it as kind of a party and had a little much to drink and created quite a bit of havoc there. So they had to call off the show that Chet and Hank Garland and those guys were going to play. So they had rented a house for them to stay in, and RCA just took recording equipment there and recorded an album called After the Riot. And that was named After the Riot because it was after the riot at the Newport Jazz Festival.
British musicians like Ringo Starr and Paul McCartney in the 1960s recorded in Nashville, too.
Those guys have roots going back into country. In fact, I wrote another book called The Beatles and Country Music. Ringo was always a real country fan. Loved Ernest Tubb and Kitty Wells, those older acts. McCartney was a big fan of the Sun Records group, called Rockabilly now. But that was really a country music artist, being country boys playing kind of stepped-up music. Of course, it's considered rock and roll later on. It was considered country music at the time. And if you listen to some of McCartney's early recordings, now he covered a lot. They covered a lot of Carl Perkins, as well as Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis. They called it rock and roll, but they had roots. That was roots in country.
Jazz vibraphonist Gary Burton, along with Bob Dylan, Linda Ronstadt, and Joan Baez, all recorded in Nashville. So there were different genres being recorded there.
The real breakthrough there came from Bob Dylan, who had started that Blonde on Blonde album in New York, and it wasn't working out. So his producer suggested Nashville. He came down, and he finished that album. Dylan recorded all or part of five albums in Nashville. And after he did it, then the rock and roll crowd said, it's cool to be in Nashville. That really opened the doors for the rock and rollers to come, particularly the folk-oriented, you know, Neil Young, Joan Baez, the singer-songwriter types.
Your book ends with a page about the 59th Annual Grammy Awards, with Nashville's impact front and center, with awards in so many different categories, including jazz, gospel, metal, pop, classical, and country. Doesn't that say it all about the Nashville music scene?
I thought it did, and that's why I finished the book with that award show. You know, that book really shows how Nashville became Music City USA. It wasn't just one thing, but it was a whole lot of things that happened through the years. But, you know, if you follow the line of that book, you can see how we have emerged as Music City USA.
And there are still recording studios down in Nashville, aren't there?
Yeah, now there's a lot less recording studios than there used to be because, you know, people can record in their basement and their bedroom, and they do on the computer. Mostly Pro Tools is the big software. It's not the only one. It's the main one people use. So they'll record some basic tracks in a studio, and then they'll overdub a guitar or vocals or something like that in somebody's house. So there's a lot of studios in homes around Nashville. But the big studios, there's not as many of them as there used to be.
What about the record companies? Have they felt the impact of home recording?
Well, no, because the labels got rid of their studios really in the 70s, started getting rid of them. Artists wanted to, actually, you trace it back to the late 60s, artists wanted to record in studio that they wanted to record in. Prior to that time, if you were signed to a major label, you had to record in the major label studio. In 1977, that ended pretty much. It was a problem with the engineers' union. They couldn't get an agreement. And that sort of officially ended that. So the labels will take a recording no matter where it's recorded.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing this great book with us, Don. Well done.
Well, thank you for calling. I appreciate that. It's good to talk to you.
I've been in conversation with Don Cusick about his book, The Nashville Sound, An Illustrated Timeline, which also includes stories about the Bluebird Cafe and the many television shows and movies with Nashville connections. You'll find a link for this book at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Lee Hay.
Lay, 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 lay across my big breast bed. Stay, lady, stay. Stay while the night is still ahead. I long to see you in the morning light. I long to reach for you in the night. Stay, lady, stay. Stay while the night is still ahead.